A winner says I am good, but not as good as I can be. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. And the thought for today says, a winner says I am good, but not as good as I can be. This is a very relative statement, and it's a statement by which most people live. They live by the statement of saying that they are good and they're okay, but they can get so much better. I allowed this to continue to be here because I want to not contradict it, but I want to embellish it. A winner says, I am good, but not as good as I can be. Ellen, a master says, I am all. I am fulfilled. I am complete. I am all good. You understand? Mm-hmm. And there is no to be. No can be. I see, this is very important. Now, I take Rex for a walk on the path. And as I take Rex for a walk on the path, we have our little fun times together. And he will snuggle up and grab my hand and grab the leash and want to play with me and just say, I love you, I love you, I love you, while he's doing this. And sometimes he'll even jump a little bit. And so I put up my knee and I say, no. And now, the normal thing to do for a man and his dog, or a man and his child, or a man and his wife, or a person in their world, is to say, Rex, don't jump up now. That's not nice. You might knock somebody over if you jump up on them. Rex, it's not good to jump up on people. Rex, don't jump up on people. And Rex is a dog, and he has a very limited vocabulary. He has a great emotional vocabulary. He understands your emotions. If you feel fear, he understands that. If you feel happiness and anger, he understands that. If you feel healthy and well, he understands that. If you feel sick, he understands that. But he doesn't understand a lot of words. And so we teach him words that are important for him to understand. And we say to Rex, when he jumps up, no. And when he bites on the leash to playfully bite on him, you know, so, no. When he does anything that he shouldn't do, we just say, no. No, just stop it. You know. And we get our anger in there and our upsetness in there. And he says, what did I do wrong? My gosh, I must have done something terrible. I must have done something really terrible, you know. And he shies away and he doesn't know what to think. But the moment you say, no, just lovingly, or sit, or come, or whatever, simple phrases. And on the path, he was getting so excited and wanting to jump up. And I said, no. And he stayed down. I didn't even need my knee in his chest. He stayed down. And we walked along, and he started chewing on the leash, you know, playfully pulling it and wanting to, you know, have my attention, my total attention as we walked along. And he was looking up at me and smiling and, you know, looking and saying, aren't we having fun? And because I walk him on the leash when it's dark outside. And it was dark this morning when I walked on the leash. So we had a great walk. But our human aspect wants to say, I am not as good as I can be. I am not as good as I can be. I'm not as good as I want to be. I'm not as good as mother wants me to be. I'm not as good as society wants me to be. I'm not as... And you see, all these wonderful knots that we're putting into motion are positive statements. Do not pick up that hot kettle from the stove. Do not stick your hand in the stove where the coals are. Do not. You see, we're so used to that. But we empower the not almost more than we empower the do. And because we empower the not more than we empower the do, the not seems to be more prevalent. And we want to be very careful. We want to be very careful that we do not get ourselves in trouble. So always be positive, always be simple. Ingeborg, what does kiss mean? Bitte?
Keep it.
Not
keep,
don't help her.
I well, keep
don't
it,
help her.
Keep it simple, sweetheart.
That's great. That's wonderful. See, you, when you listen to yourself and depend on yourself, you always get the answer. You're brilliant.
Only have to
Yeah, you,
wait a moment.
Yeah, you shift into gear there, yeah. Mm-hmm. You were listening to me. Keep it simple, sweetheart. Keep it simple, stupid, however you want to do it. Keep it simple, stupid, that's the way humanity does it. Keep it simple, sweetheart, that's the way we do it. Keep it simple. And when we keep it simple, what happens? What happens is that it's easy. It's easy. Now, what did Lao Tse or Confucius say? What did Confucius say about the path? I'm sorry? Ellen, yes,
you see the Buddha.
What did Confucius say? Confucius was not interested in the Buddha at all. He said the first step of 1,000 miles, you know, is the first step. He had a different way of saying it there. It's in our book. So the first step of 1,000-mile journey, the 1,000-mile journey, something, starts with the first step. That's what it is. 1,000-mile journey starts with the first step. Why didn't you remind me that? You knew that. You had that right on the tip of your tongue. Now, the 1,000-mile journey starts with the first step, okay? Now, is that easy? Sure. Are you tired? No, you just started, you know. And the second step, and the third step, and the fourth step, and the millionth step. And when you feel like it, you sit down, and you sing, and you look around at the beautiful scenery, and then you get up and you go again. Every time I walk the path, we have about 4 or 5 benches along the way, and Rex walks directly to a bench and sits down and says, Dad, you're sitting down and taking a rest. Because when you sit down and take a rest, then you pet me. And I like being petted. I mean, he's not stupid. He's a very brilliant boy. And so every place, but now he's getting so he wants to be petted in between times too. And so he snuggles in his nose into my hand and says, come on, you know, run it down my head there. That's the idea. He knows what he's doing, and we do too. And we have to be the master. We have to be the master. And I keep a short leash on him because he's walking with me. I'm not having him going out and smelling everything around, but I keep a short leash because he's walking with me. I had my perfect leash, but unfortunately he ate it up while watching a movie one night. But those things do happen. We'll find another one yet. But it was just like a 1-foot leash, really perfect. And I use that with our many pins that we had. We had LeBaron, LeDuc, and they were about twice as high as Love is. And I had them on a 3-link, you know. I had Button and LeBaron, LeDuc, all on the same leash. And that was good. We walked all over the place, had a great time. But you see, it's not as good as I can be. We are in the school of the master here. We are in the school of infinite philosophy. And what does a philosopher teach? Anybody want to answer that loudly? What does a philosopher teach? A philosopher teaches what he believes. It's nice if he teaches be yourself and have fun. That I say is very good. But a philosopher teaches what he believes. Now, what did Goethe believe? What did Kant believe? What did Schopenhauer believe? What did Freud believe? What did all of these great philosophers and teachers and people of various sorts believe? Hmm? Whatever they believed. Whatever they believed. And what is the Kantian philosophy? What Mr. Kant believed. Interesting name, Kant. Huh? Mm-hmm. What Mr. Kant believed. It was his way of thinking, his way of doing something. And when I tell people I'm a philosopher, they say, oh, whose philosophy do you teach? I said, mine. Yours? Yours? You think you're good enough to have a philosophy? Well, Kant, Schopenhauer, Hegel, and all these people were in their perhaps early 30s, 20s, 30s, 40s when they were writing their philosophy. Maybe in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s as they were writing more philosophy. But they wrote their philosophy early. Now, when was Michelangelo ready to do his famous work? When he was old and gray? No. He did it all the time. He did it from the time he left art school with the Medici family, that at the time he left there to go off and, you know, start doing something, people started hiring him to do their family portraits and to do the other types of things he did, and he became quite famous. Now, who did he do David for, that great statue that he made out of marble? Himself. He chose the marble. He brought the marble back. And the guy was willing to take a chance on him because the marble was no good. It was flawed. But he made the flaw into a perfect statue. Now, you see, it wasn't that he could do it. He already saw himself in his consciousness with the completed object. He might have embellished it a little bit here and there, but basically the completed object. And probably if he would look closely to his inner self, he would have seen what he did come up with finally as the completed object. Because when you look at the drawings that Michelangelo left behind of his early cuttings of the David statue, you see him as he's carving away, and you think that that's what he had in mind. No, that's what he had in mind to get deeper, to get deeper. You see, he didn't want the fingers to bust off. I mean, you know, that's how do you chip away with a chisel and a hammer on little fingers, you know? My God, he didn't use a Dremel. He didn't use one of these little drill and a little sander. He used a chisel. And to have the eye, did you notice the eye has a hole in it? So that no matter how you look at it, the eye follows you. It's a beautiful piece of artistry that does that. See, he took the artistry he learned from many artists to do that. And he didn't say, I can be. He says, I am the greatest, to himself. And he went out and produced it. And others came and saw what he did and said, wow, what a guy. What a guy. And he had the guts to do a statue of Moses. Did you know that? He did a giant statue of Moses for the Vatican. And the statue, I believe, is several stories high, or pretty high at least. And the statue has horns on it. Moses has horns on his head. It's swirls of hair that are definite horns. You know? Now, that the Pope let him get away with that, you know, or that the cardinals who were paying for these things, you know, wow, he had class, you know, to do what he wanted to do, because he was revealing that inner part of the Moses that wasn't always just on base. But anyhow, a winner says, I'm good, but not as good as I can be. A master says, I am that I am that I am. A master says, it is getan, done. A master says, it is done. It is already done right here. And I merely reveal it. It's already done in my conscience, and I reveal it. It's already done in my heart, and I reveal it. My soul, and I reveal it. You know, wonderful, isn't it? I mean, we're dealing with some pretty high-powered concepts here. And if you can tune into it, wow. You see, do you have to be a certain age to tune in? No. Mozart was just 3 years old, I believe, when he picked up his dad's violin, started playing it. And he didn't play it like a master, but he played it very good. Very good. And he wrote music, which I love to think about. Mozart wrote music, and he never had an eraser. He never erased one note. Every note he put down was precisely what he wanted to be there. And they played it, and it was good. Very, very good. But you see, he wasn't what the best that he can do is yet to happen. He did it. It was what he did. He believed in himself. Now, 3-year-old kid believing in himself, we can believe in ourselves. We're 25, you know? Believe in yourself. Start believing that you can do anything. But what does it take, Ellen? What does it take? It takes self-determination, self-dedication, self-diligence, self-discipline, and then you got eternal, unconditional love. And then it takes being untouchable. You're not touched by anybody's attitudes, anybody's life, or anything. It's just like Ellie. I said, Ellie, go your way. Say, thank you for the privilege of being with you, but I have a different story to tell, and I'm going to tell it my way. And she would do that anyhow. She would alienate all of the people that Bernie had because she was going to do it her way. And that's great. Always do it your way. See, be untouchable by what the world says about you. Stand up for who you are. Be one-pointed. Keep your eyes totally on what your goal is. Michelangelo was not thinking of a dozen statues at the same time. He may have drawn different drawings and stuff, but when he was working on any statue, he was working on that statue so perfectly, so beautifully, so wonderfully. And be unpossessed. See, the man was not very nice at the quarry. The man says, this is a flawed piece of marble. If you want it, you know, go ahead. But it's a flawed piece of marble. A flawed piece of marble. And what did Michelangelo do? He let the flaw disappear. He cut around the flaw. What does a dentist do when he is working on your gums? He cuts around the part that is not good. And then he plants new skin or new tissue to build up there. And when the new tissue is built up, then he can do an implant or whatever he's going to do. But first he has to get rid of the flawed tissue. Now, you say, well, of course, anybody knows that. Anybody knows that a dentist must get rid of the garbage tissue before he can do the good work. Well, why are we so surprised that Michelangelo cut around the flawed tissue of the marble and brought forth the beautiful statue he did, you know? My brother ran a motel in Laguna Beach for many, many years, and people came there and lived there, and some didn't have a lot of money, most of them, and so he would sometimes take a painting from them. And he told one painter, do a painting for my mother. She's staying with me here at the motel. And so the painter, nice kid, did a beautiful painting, beautiful nude, beautiful woman, just as gorgeous as could be. And my mother said, that's not what I want to hang in my living room. And so the guy said, well, what would you like? She said, well, I like a seascape. You know, we're right here on the ocean. I'd like to have a seascape, something beautiful like that. And he says, okay. So he took the canvas and painted a seascape on it. Underneath it is that lady. But the canvas that mother got, that she saw, was a seascape, and a beautiful seascape, nicely done. You see, we don't need to worry about it. Now, is that naked lady going to be under there? Is she not a bad lady? Is that bad? Is that naked lady under there? She's always under there. She's always back there. But like in us, we have conditions that we don't necessarily want to think about and remember in our life. So just put the new painting right over and let the old be disappeared forever. But the moment we bring up that we let all the dogs loose in the kennel, the moment we bring up that we were naughty, the moment we bring up that we had bad experiences, boom! It's just like the experience was happening right then. Because you're right there in that experience. And the moment you bring up good experiences, what happens, Ingeborg?
You grow.
That's right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
The moment you bring up good experiences, you're right there.
Yeah.
Wonderful. This is what life's all about. This is what life's all about. A winner says, I'm good, but not as good as I can be. A master says, it is done. And I see you all as supercalifragilisticexpialidocious masters of the highest, highest, highest degree. I love you. I love you. I love you.